Pope Benedict XVI's pastoral letter to the Catholics of Ireland was published on March 20th last. Eimear McCarthy speaks to the editor of the Irish Catholic, Gary O'Sullivan, about reaction to the Holy Father's letter.
The first people the Pope speaks to in his pastoral letter are to the abuse victims themselves and their families. And he writes that you've suffered grievously and I am truly sorry. Now, we know before the Pope's letter came out, one of the first things that the victims said they wanted to see and hear was the Pope saying he was sorry. So has his apology been heard in Ireland?
Yes, I think it has. It's been heard loud and clear. There were some minority voices saying that the apology wasn't enough, it didn't go far enough, it wasn't personal. But I think in the main, the reaction was, and I was on programmes with, national radio programmes with lots of people who would not be considered, necessarily friends of the church. And it was accepted that the Pope had apologised. And I think that the demands for the Pope to apologise fully really have been laid to rest by it. I think that has, as an issue, that has moved off the central stage.
The second people he addresses, of course, are the clergy who abused children. And he wrote that they must stand before properly constituted tribunals. To the best of your knowledge, what is the current situation regarding ongoing investigations of clergy accused of child abuse in Ireland?
Well, the vast majority of people who abused, of clergy who abused children, are dead or have been dealt with by the courts. There are two chapters of the Murphy Report, which was released in November, which were held back and will be released later this year, precisely because there are a couple of cases before the courts here, and for legal reasons they couldn't be published. So they will be resolved soon, and I suppose the whole media storm will begin again about this whole issue and how it was handled. Also, there have been calls for the police to investigate some of these cases, and it's believed that they are looking into it, but it's unlikely really that any charges will be pressed, because in many cases no laws were broken, or the amount of time that's passed makes it very, very difficult for any charges to be brought. But like I say, many of the people who were involved in these kind of abuse cases are dead or have left the priesthood or have been thrown out of the priesthood.
Because, of course, we need here to emphasise that while there is a statute of limitations in civilian trials, in a lot of cases of sexual abuse of children in the canonical process, the statute of limitations is often waived.
Absolutely. In the Ferns case, where there was a report in 2000 similar to the Murphy report in 2005, the Ferns diocese went to the Vatican, to Cardinal Ratzinger at the time, and had several priests removed from ministry. So there is a proven process, and I don't think the church currently will be found wanting in that, because they're very keen to be shown to be clearing this issue up speedily.
The third people he spoke to in his pastoral letter there, Gary, was to the bishops themselves. And the issue of episcopal responsibility, indeed responsibility in general, has probably been one of the hottest issues that needs to be looked at and has angered most the victims of child sexual abuse. And in his letter, the Pope writes to the bishops that some of them and their predecessors failed to apply canon law and made grave errors of judgment and failed in leadership, basically. Now, in the aftermath of their meeting with Pope Benedict XVI in February last, the bishops of Ireland admitted their failure and asked forgiveness. But now, since then, Gary, since they've returned to Ireland, we're now in the beginning of April, just after Easter week. Since then, what exactly have they done to address this problem, the problem of a vacuum of pastoral leadership for a church that seems to be increasingly disaffected with its hierarchy?
Well, absolutely. And since the bishops came back from Rome, they came back with something like a bounce in their step, because I suppose for the first time in a long time, they seemed to have a plan. They came back and they said that the Pope would be sending his letter, and that was all part of a process. But since they've come back, really, they've been reeling from blow after blow, self-inflicted blows, to be honest. It's not difficult to understand why outsiders would see the bishops lacking any credibility because of these things, but also because the Pope, in his letter to the Irish bishops, said to them that their credibility had been seriously undermined.
This weekend, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, said that it's quite difficult in some parts of Ireland to go down the street wearing a clerical collar now. This was revealed to him by a friend of his, he said. It was in an interview with BBC. In his letter, the Pope also reached out to encourage those priests and religious who have, to an extent, inherited the consequences of what paedophile priests have done. What is the mood like among them, the clergy and the priests left in Ireland to try, as it were, to pick up the pieces?
Well, I think your ordinary, decent priest has been deeply, deeply hurt. But I think what is keeping them together, what is keeping those men still in their parishes every Sunday ministering to the flock, is basically that they have the support of their of the people in their parishes, you know. And I think people see the ordinary priest, the decent priest, and they don't associate him with bishops and cardinals and people who can't seem to get this their act together. But when you say the word paedophile in Ireland, people will almost finish it for you by putting the word priest at the end of it. It's become it's terminology now that is very, very unfortunate. And, you know, it's going to have huge consequences for recruiting priests and vocations in the future. And it is a term of mockery now for priests, and there is some difficulty for them wearing their full collars and their full clericals down the street. But that said, there has been very large turnouts for Easter. There usually is a Christmas and Easter in Ireland, and this year there's no evidence of any decline in attendance or in collections. The Archbishop of Canterbury was raising a very serious issue, and what he was saying really was that the Irish Church, the problems of the Irish Church are problems for the Irish people. That the Church was so ingrained in society that to kind of for it to lose all credibility and be taken out of the equation leaves a huge hole in Irish society and culture. And this is something that we need to discuss and debate.
Let's then speak about the Church in Ireland. Let's speak about the Catholics, who are the Church in Ireland, the ordinary everyday Catholics who you said turned out in large numbers for the Holy Week and Easter ceremonies. The lay Catholic voice in Ireland has been a silent voice up to now. Do you think it's going to be heard, or is it being heard anymore in the wake of all these of this scandal, of the bishops being called to the Vatican, of the Pope's pastoral letter?
Well, there is no kind of voice for lay Catholics in one sense. I suppose when they turn up for Mass, by doing so, they're not really showing any. They're not necessarily showing support for the institutional church. What they're showing is that their faith has not been damaged, and many Catholics have been able to separate the scandals from the, you know, in the church, from the fact that the church is a church of Jesus Christ, and they have faith in Jesus. Only on Easter Sunday, there was a group protesting outside the main church in Dublin, the Pro Cathedral, and they had tied babies' shoes to the railings. And, you know, this is an awful sight for people going into Mass, and some people were being heckled as they went into Mass. You know, what Irish lazy Irish Catholics are wondering is, why can't the bishops and the cardinal sort this problem out?
Now, let's look perhaps a little more deeply at why it happened. In his letter to the Irish people, or after his letter to the Irish people came out, many opinionists, journalists and newspapers, not only in Ireland but across the world, singled out the Pope's observations on the consequences of the secularisation of Irish society and, as a result, the Irish Church during the 20th century, claiming that he laid all the blame for paedophile priests on secularism. Is it really as simple as that? And do you think that's what the Pope was saying?
You see, some people are saying that, and I wonder, have they fully read the Pope's letter? Like, I read that part of the letter very closely again and again, because what the Pope was doing, which I thought was interesting, was he was trying to get to a resolution of what caused this, and he's very clear on that in the letter. He doesn't you know, categorically state that one thing or the other. He tries to draw a context, very much like an academic looking at a period of time in history. He's trying to look at the context and what were the issues. Now, he does mention secularisation, but some people have said that what he's talking about there is the secularisation in religious formation in the seminaries and maybe religious houses. And he also talks about, you know, misinterpretation of Vatican II. And he suggests as well, you know, maybe that was, there's the impression it's given that there's a liberalisation in the church of that time. And of course, we know there was in the 60s and 70s, a lot of things changed. But I think what half the paedophiles, the people who were named as paedophiles in the Murphy Commission report, half of them were ordained before the end of Vatican II. So if we're going to look at the seminaries and how these people got into the priesthood in the first place, we have to go back to the 40s and 50s in Ireland, when Ireland was a completely closed society and the church ran a very strict and some would say repressive regime. And so these people got in then. The difficulty was in the late 60s and 70s, when they were being discovered. The attitude at the time in the church in Ireland seemed to be, oh, send them to psychologists and let's deal with this in a pastoral way, in a caring way, rather than bringing on the rigors of canon law. So in some sense, the church leaders at that time maybe were too soft.
Now, of course, this isn't just an Irish problem, however, and particularly in the wake of the Murphy and Ryan reports, we've seen cases of abuse of children by clergy and religious make headlines now in Germany, in Austria, in Holland, in the USA, and it's increasing every day. We're seeing another case being revealed in some part of the world by the papers. A common denominator is the perceived view that the Vatican has been inactive, and particularly Benedict XVI. As a Catholic and as an Irishman, and above all as a journalist, how have you been following the development of the sex abuse scandal and the media's handling of it?
I think in terms of child abuse, the church, people expect the church to be open, honest and transparent. And I think that's a reasonable expectation. Sometimes, yes, the media are too hard or they go too far or they don't have all the facts. But blaming the media just looks like you're trying to avoid the hard questions. You can't go wrong once you stick to the facts and stick to the truth. The truth will set us free, and I think that is often in the past, especially in Ireland, that is an axiom that the church has forgotten.
Gary, getting back to what really is the heart of this issue, and the heart of this issue, first of all, are the victims themselves, and secondly of all, of course, is where do we go from here, looking at an Irish context, the future of the church in Ireland. One of the things that the Pope has called for, apart from renewal, prayer and reflection, was also a visitation, an apostolic visitation of the seminaries, the major seminary, which of course is in Maynooth, the religious seminaries in Ireland, to try to come to terms of what exactly is going on there, what's happening there and where to move forward. You have written an editorial in the Irish Catholic regarding the possibility of an Irish visitation or an apostolic visitation to Ireland. And if I can quote you, you write, there are many questions and few answers, and the Pope himself seems keen to get to the heart of the matter. However, in tandem with the Roman visitation, we need an Irish visitation of our own church. Quoting a former Irish Taoiseach and a former Irish Prime Minister, you also say, or propose, an Irish solution to an Irish problem. Can you tell us exactly what you mean by this?
Well, what I mean is the people best positioned to understand the Catholic Church in Ireland are the Irish people and the Irish laity. So the Pope in that letter talks about the laity. So why not give laity a role? There are people who in Ireland, Catholics, who are good enough to run the country and run all the other institutions in this country. There are people who are high court judges. There are people. The President of Ireland is a well known Catholic. So why can't people like that be brought in with representatives of the bishops, representatives of the religious and priests, and that we'd have an Irish commission that would look at the church in Ireland, maybe have a historian as well. Look at the past, look at the present, and look at the future. It doesn't have to be binding, but we need that kind of thing. And why can't we do it here? The only way this is going to be sorted out is by the laity being involved with the bishops and with the priests and the clergy. Let the Vatican send in people to inspect the seminaries if they want. There are only two in the country. But the Irish people need to be involved in this or the church won't have a future.
Because we are in the Easter season, is there anything positive, anything whatsoever, any sign of hope to be gathered out of all of this painful experience that the church in Ireland is going through at the moment?
Of course there is. It's Easter, so we believe in a resurrected Jesus, and that is our hope as a people of faith. And in Ireland, you know, we're very quick to say, we talk about the Holy Spirit. We see the Holy Spirit when there's positive things, but we don't see the Holy Spirit when there's negative things. And I've seen very few people say that maybe this is the Holy Spirit. Well, the Holy Spirit is all around. It's in the voice of the victims, it's in the voice of priests, it's in the voice of people in general, and in the voice of the Holy Father writing to the people of Ireland. So, you know, you only have to look at this. You know, what's really happening here? What is happening is evil that was in the church, as the Holy Father said, filth that was in the church is being revealed. A light has been shone in on a room of darkness. And that's a good thing. We should be rejoicing in some sense that this is all coming out, and that whatever grows from this will be something new and purer. And, you know, in many ways, there's a lot of people in Ireland who left the church, walked away from the church, whose voices, when they criticized the church in the past, were crushed, you know, and they were, some were victims and some weren't. But hopefully the church in the future will be humbler and less arrogant and more inclusive of everyone. You know, the parable of the lost sheep is lost in Ireland. You know, nobody wants to minister to the people that don't go to Mass on Sunday, that have left the church. And yet Jesus commanded his apostles to go after the lost sheep. You know, there was more rejoicing in heaven over the one sinner than the 100 righteous people, you know. And I think we need to get back to basics. We need to get back to the gospel. And our bishops need to get back to the values of the gospel and talk about Jesus Christ. We need new wineskins and new wine in the church in Ireland, and perhaps in other parts of the church around the world.